Welcome to the EdTech Posse Podcast. The EdTech Posse Podcast is an occasional podcast of conversations about education, technology, and learning featuring Alec Kuros of the University of Regina, Dean Shoresky of Prairie South School Division, Rick Schwier from the University of Saskatchewan, and me, Rob Wall, from North Battleford Comprehensive High School. We're starting up again after a summer off, so I guess we could call this Season 2, or Posse 2.0, I guess, if we were looking for venture capital funding. Our production has changed a bit thanks to my new laptop, so we'll need to re-record the usual introductions at the beginning of the show. I've also been playing around with some different theme music, and we may get a new theme for each show if I get restless and feel like playing around with GarageBand. In this podcast, Rick Schwier and I are joined by Heather Ross, an instructional designer at SciAST in Saskatoon, and our first female Posse deputy, to talk about open source software in education. And welcome to the EdTech Posse podcast. This is Rob Wall, and I'm joined tonight, or I'm sitting around with Rick Schwier, who normally is part of the Posse, and a first-timer. Actually, the second person we've had on the podcast following in the footsteps of Stephen Downs is Heather Ross. Heather
big
is...
Big shoes, Heather. Big shoes.
Very big shoes.
There's actually been some accusation that we were overly concentrated testosterone speaking on the EdTech Posse, so I wanted to get Heather in for a while. Anyway, I thought this was a good thing. Heather is an instructional designer at SciAST and a graduate of the Educational Communication and Technology Program at the University of Saskatchewan. Anything else, Heather?
No, you pretty much covered it, I think. I'm kind of boring.
Not at all.
I'm the only non-Cubs fan on this.
Hey, yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, she's a Dodgers fan. Oh, my gosh.
A dodgy fan?
Yeah.
We'd better stay away from baseball. Besides, when it comes to Cubs, there are other guys who already got that one covered.
Not to mention, they aren't worth talking about this summer.
I haven't even been watching. Haven't even been paying attention to the stats, which I guess
you're ahead
is
of the
thing.
Game.
Yeah. I won't have to worry about what my schedule's like in October. Anyway, off baseball. We're going to talk a little bit about the importance of open source software, and I think open source as kind of a movement or an idea within the realm of education. We're doing this because Heather and I and Alec Kuros, who is not with us tonight, we're doing this impromptu, but hopefully Alec will be provoked enough by our conversation to want to respond at least, then we can put that up as another podcast. Heather and I are planning, along with Alec, to put a booth together for the SACE conference, which is in Saskatchewan, in Saskatoon, on, what's the date on that?
It's September 28th, 29th, and 30th.
Yeah. And actually, that kind of works out nicely that Rick is here because he's giving the keynote on September 28th. But we're going to put up a little booth in the vendor area about open source because I think it's important for open source to have some kind of presence at the conference. And right now, the only thing that looks open source-ish is there's one session on Friday that Mark Jackson is giving on free software and its uses. So that's the only open source presence at the school or at the conference, and I think it's important to have a little bit more than that.
How about if I record my speech and give it away for free?
Hey, that would be great.
There you go, open source.
Are you planning on doing that?
I hadn't really thought about it, but I might.
Okay. I think that's an excellent idea. I'll lend you the iRiver. You can walk around with it if you want. So, Heather, I guess we'll start with you because I think this was your idea to begin with, and you sent out an email to Alec and I about open source in education. Why do you think open source software and the open source movement is so important in education?
Well, I think it's broader than just than just what is strictly considered open source. It's anything that really is freeware or inexpensive shareware or stuff that is truly open source, because it's education budgets, I mean, they're tight, as we all know that. And this gives schools and educators an opportunity to have the tools that they need without breaking the budget.
Mm-hmm. I definitely, that's true at the school where I work. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Rick, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that issue of budget, isn't it a tricky one? Because I think you're right. It is a good reason to have open source stuff in schools. Isn't it a shame that as a society we're still not willing to invest in education the way we should? That we literally put education on the dole, and we say, okay, well, if you can beg some free stuff or contribute to it, whatever that is, sure, have all of that you want, but we can't really afford to put commercial software in there, so you really need to go out and do that. Let's have a garage sale approach to it. How about that?
Well, I think that's a great idea.
But you know, I just think it's a sad issue I think Heather, you're bang on that is a solid reason for it. I just lament the fact that it is.
Oh yeah, it's a sad fact that we need it, in that sense. But I think it's reality, and one of the things that I'd be interested in knowing is how many people who are behind open source and stuff and things like that have an education background, or they've worked in education in some way and they see where the shortage is.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's kind of a neat aspect of it, that especially in proper open source, where you have open code that people contribute to, it's a neat kind of subversive way that the people who need it are the ones building it.
Mm-hmm. We could call it radical.
You could.
we're getting that Stephen Downs in here just in case, right?
Yes. Yeah, the spirit of the podcast. You know, there are some really good open source projects that are quite deeply embedded in education. One of the ones that when we were at my school looking to try and expand the availability of access to digital resources, and we were also looking for a way to make use of older computers that had, you know, had been in labs for a long time and were no longer current, or older computers that were donated through programs like Computers for School, as the K-12 Linux program, the K-12 LTSP. And what the K-12 LTSP program does is it really, it's a win-win all around. You've got an open source software. It runs on a server that runs terminals on older computers or on any computer. And you can go and you can take a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old computer, I think 10-year-old would still work, and run it, hook it up to the K-12 LTSP server, and many different terminals can connect up to one server. So you've got a way of getting free educational resources, because the K-12 LTSP server package is geared toward education. You've got a way of keeping some of the older hardware working, which again saves on budget, and you've also got a way of keeping computers from being thrown into the landfill. So really, there's no loss in projects like that. And I think projects like that, projects like Edubuntu, are starting to realize that education, especially in the educational field outside of Europe and North America, are really open to any kinds of things that, you know, allow you to get access to the resources without spending a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Or without forcing you to, you know, use pirated copies of Windows, which is, you know, the other alternative.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and I guess another one of the arguments for open source is that you just end up with better products over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get enough people contributing good stuff to a product and the development of it, theoretically anyway, you're going to end up with a stronger product.
Right, and some good stuff out there. At the school where I work, we are using Moodle for some of the different classes. Some of my classes are completely using Moodle to run basically and manage the entire class. Some it's just a certain unit or an activity being run through Moodle. We have wikis that are being used for a number of different activities. We have blogs that are being used for a number of different activities. And all of these things are only possible because we can download the software. We can install it on the servers that we have that are they're running Linux as well. It would work on Microsoft running Apache and PHP, but it's just that much easier with Linux, I think. And having the resources there when we need them, if we had to pay for them, I'm sure that we could get them eventually, but we wouldn't have the chance to experiment and try things out as freely as we do, because there would be monetary cost to the experimentation. And that would hamper, frankly, that would hamper some of the things that we do at my school.
Right.
Heather, what about you? Any open source stuff happening in SciAST or in the colleges?
Officially, no.
Well, nobody official. No one official. Everyone who is an official with SciAST, please turn off the podcast now.
We're looking at some use of possibly finding some way of using wikis.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really SciAST, much like the University of Saskatchewan, is a WebCT environment.
Boo!
That's an entirely other podcast, I think.
I'm not going to make any judgments during this podcast on that.
you can make judgments. It'll be like coming attractions for once we all get together and sink our fingers into Black Web.
Yeah, I would very much like the opportunity to work with Moodle,
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. Was it the University of Calgary is using Drupal?
Yeah, read that on Darcy Norman's blog.
Right. But I think at the moment we're just sort of sticking to what's been there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
We just upgraded and there's some interesting new features, but I'd like the opportunity to try new things, obviously. You know my feelings on open source in general.
Right. since you came up with the idea of having an open source presence at the conference, yeah, I'm pretty attuned to your feelings on that.
I've got to be the first one to ask, why is it that you guys had to pay for a table to present open source?
Heather has been in contact on that, so I'll let her okay. Answer that.
I think it's beautiful irony.
I've been actually emailing tonight with our contact for the table, and
yeah.
He said he was going to, because we aren't selling anything, he said maybe if we mention that we are affiliated with certain institutions, he might be able to waive that fee.
Oh, that's great. I hadn't read that yet.
Yeah, you should go. I emailed you that mail that I got from him tonight.
Yeah, I just brought it up.
But we all need to register for the conference, he said, which I've already done.
Oh, and I'll be doing that as well.
Yeah,
so that's not a problem.
I didn't think that would be an issue. I assumed we were all planning on going.
Mm-hmm.
If we were going to have a booth there.
I'm just going for the keynote.
Right.
Well, I want to go to that session on free software as well.
Yeah, I want to find out what other people are into, what other people are using.
Yeah, but I guess that's sort of one of the things why I want to look at a broader picture and why I don't think we should be so set on, per se, what's strictly defined as open source, is I think that some people, when they're just looking for a simple tool to use and they can't afford a commercial one, they're going to get to a site, they may get to some of these sites and see that, you know, all this stuff about adding to the code and so forth, and I think that may scare some people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that when we're talking about tools that educators can use, we need to talk open source, but broader, and get into the other tools that are out there that aren't necessarily commercial tools.
Free stuff.
Free stuff is always good.
Yeah, and I don't know what the environment is for free stuff when it comes to PCs, because I'm a Mac person, and I've always been a Mac person, except when I'm at work. But I know there's a ton of free stuff, educational stuff that you can use for a Mac.
Yeah, I think the Unix layer at the base of Mac really helps to tie it in with a lot of the open source stuff, because you know most of the open source stuff is in the Linux Unix world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. True enough. Mm-hmm. What is Sakai like now? I haven't heard much about Sakai lately.
Oh, neither have I.
No, I actually haven't ever gotten in there at all to their yeah. site. I've looked around others, but not that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a great idea, Heather, to go with free and inexpensive or shareware kinds of stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Applause for Heather.
Yeah, yeah, because that really that increases the number of things you can give away too. Because didn't you say Alec was thinking about giving away a CD? I think it's a great idea. He's got a budget for them.
Well, even if not a CD, even a handout with the links to the sites.
Yeah.
Where all this stuff is, whether it's sending them to the WordPress site for use for doing blogs.
Right.
Or the Moodle site, or that I sent you that link tonight, Rick, about the Mac thing, Journaler, which is a free program, and I love it.
It's very cool.
It's called Journaler.
Okay.
And I'll send you the link to that. It's just an absolutely amazing thing that you can use as a desktop blogging program if you want.
Oh, sweet. Because, all the other desktop blogging programs I've seen have been commercial ones, of course. Is it the fate of any application genre to end up as open source?
No.
No, give me an example of something that wouldn't be able to go open source. I'm just curious.
I don't know that it's that it can't. It's the fact that it may not, because one of the things that think about why Mac is so popular in education is because it is out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ready to go. And I think that most educators don't have the time to fiddle around with stuff. They want something that's going to be simple and ready for them to use.
Definitely true.
And I think that's the way most people are these days, which is why I think it will keep. Maybe there'll be open source going on with it, with some of this stuff off to the side, but it won't be up front to everybody, because I think that's just going to keep people from saying, no, I'm looking for something simple, I want it ready to go.
So when we're looking at things to offer the educators that are coming by at SACE, mm-hmm. Given we're dealing with, probably as a demographic, we're dealing with a more technologically adept crowd than most teachers, but you want to concentrate on things that are download it, install it, it's ready to go right now.
I think there should be a mix.
Yeah.
I certainly don't want to leave out, introducing them something about Moodle or something about WordPress or anything else that's an open source system.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we should include things that aren't necessarily open source that we find to be valuable and that they can use and they might not have heard of. Or may not know where to find.
Right. And I think there's a lot of good open source programs that are ready to go out of the box. Things like Firefox, That's something that everybody should know about just because of the security flaws that are inherent in Internet Explorer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what kinds of neat applications are you using that are open source right now, Rob?
Right now, open on my desktop or in general?
Just in general. What are you using in general? What do you really like?
Hang on.
What do you like that's out there? That's...
I know. Open up the applications bin and see what's sitting in there. In terms of web-based stuff, I'm using Moodle, using WordPress, played around with Elg a little bit, building some websites with Drupal. On my personal computer on the Mac, there is AbbeyWord, which is a really nice word processor.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, Audacity for sound editing. Although I have to admit that I'm kind of ashamed of this, that I actually tend to use GarageBand more now that I have the Mac. I feel so cheap about that.
you slut.
Yes. There's an FTP client called CyberDuck that I'm using. Let's see. Firefox is there. FreeMind is there. GIMP is there. Google Earth isn't open source, but it's a free program. I've got that on there.
Rob, now that you're on the Mac, instead of Firefox, can I recommend Camino?
You can, yeah.
Which is actually sort of, it's in the Firefox family.
Same code base, yeah. Does it work with all the extensions?
I don't know. It's just what I've been using for the past at least couple of months, and it seems pretty stable. I like it.
Okay.
It has tabs.
So does Firefox Beta.
Right.
Firefox version 2 beta, which is what I'm running as a browser right now, and I haven't found any problems with it. It's working very smoothly. Let's see, there's one called CMAP, which is a mind mapping tool.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
You've used that one? Actually,
yeah,
you know what? I think
I
got it from your site.
I recommended it to a few people.
Yeah, I was one of them. NeoOffice, which is a Macintosh port of OpenOffice, although I think OpenOffice is moving over to the Mac as well. I've got another content management system that I played around with called Plone, and I have an installation on the computer just so I can play with that. I'm not doing any serious building with it. I just have it there so that I can play with it. An instant messaging client called Spark, a text editor called Text Wrangler. Oh, I don't think that's open source. I think that one's proprietary, but it is free software. And an RSS reader called Vienna, which is just a joy. It's an extremely good RSS reader. And for anybody using a Mac, I would recommend that you take a look at it for a desktop RSS reader. So that's all the open stuff that I have on my machine and a few things that I play around with at work as well.
Well, you know what? That's an amazing array of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob, is Quicksilver open source?
Oh, sorry, I'm also using Quicksilver, of course. And Quicksilver is not open source, but it is free, although it's still in beta, so we're all worried that one day it won't be free. And, you know, the sample's always free, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose, yeah.
But that is, Rick, it's an amazing array of stuff, and a lot of it is ready to go. You know, OpenOffice is ready to go. Firefox is ready to go. You know, it's really, really good stuff.
I'm nowhere close to you on the either one of you, for that matter, for the number of open source items I use. But I just wondered, what does your selection decision path look like? I mean, do you choose things because they're open source and say, you know, I'm going to shake my fist at commercial entities everywhere and do what's right? I mean, is this an ecological perspective that you're taking? Or is it just that these are good programs and you want them?
For me, up until recently, it's been economic. I was a student. So I was looking for cost, and open source programs tend to be free.
Yeah.
And I also have a lot of free programs or very cheap shareware programs because of that. But usability and durability are major things. I will pay a little more. I'll pay considerably more, actually, if it works and it's good compared to one that's free and just keeps crashing or destroys the file I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah, that destroying the file thing tends to disenchant one rather quickly.
Well, I have some that was a free virus protection for the Mac.
Yeah.
That somebody from the university actually recommended to me from the campus computer store, and it kept freezing my computer.
Oh, my.
You don't need virus protection on the Mac, Heather. That's the whole point. Haven't you seen the ads?
Well, you don't need it necessarily for your Mac, but if I get a virus from a PC user and then I send the file on to another PC user, they're screwed.
Oh, I suppose.
Yeah,
and so I do like to have virus protection to protect the other people I communicate with.
What protection were you using?
I honestly don't remember. It was right after I upgraded my operating system to 10.4, and 10.4 had just come out. And I honestly use Norton antivirus.
Okay.
And they did not have a version. They were not quick enough to get a version out.
Yeah.
I wanted something, and Campus Computer Store said you can download
Sophos. It.
Yes, through the university, and it kept freezing my computer.
You know, we've run into a few little issues, too. Karen just bought a new computer, a new Mac, and we've got Sophos on it, and it's causing, well, at least I think you may be explaining something we're seeing happening, so
mm-hmm.
I'll check it out.
But that's really why I got into programs like this, was
cheap
cost.
Yeah.
How about you, Rob?
Well, a number of different things. Cheap. It comes down to partially cheap and partially at work. The school that I'm at is Linux-based for the most part. For most of the installed terminals, we're running Sunray Thin clients and running Linux on our server. And there are a few Macs, mostly in the library, that are used for media production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're extremely good at, so that's what we have for media production. And I think there are a few PCs around, although we're getting rid of those slowly and replacing them with thin clients that connect up to Windows Terminal Server. So it's the same kind of idea, running Windows instead of running Linux. But because we're working in Linux, you know, most of the software that's out there is free. I don't know if there's much in terms of paid or proprietary Linux software. I don't know of a lot of Linux geeks that would bother to install it if it was paid or proprietary. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I, you know, started by working with Apache and playing around with the configuration file to run websites and, you know, all the way through things like that, some Perl scripting. And I actually wrote a Perl script that managed to destroy all of the teacher's files one night at the school.
Excellent.
Yeah, luckily I managed to get the backup restored before anything went bad, before the teachers came in the morning. But yeah, I've done that.
It's a good thing you're a vampire.
Yeah. Well, not so much anymore. But you know, I started off doing things like that, and you know, when the open source programs are available for my home computer, well, I'm definitely going to use them. And in terms of where I get them from, I go out and I read blogs and find out what other people are recommending. And, you know, there are a few blogs that I read that if the people there recommend it, I'll definitely take a look at. I mean, Heather is one. She's pointed me to some good programs. Darcy Norman is another one that has some good programs kicking around. So it's you know, the who I know that determines what I'm going to do. I see that Dean Shiresky has signed in. I'm going to see if I can get him into the conversation. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
I have to be honest that Rob talked about writing scripts and stuff, and with WordPress I've messed around with some of the HTML, but with open source programs I don't touch code. I'm looking for a program that is already for me to use. I'm looking for usability. I'm just somebody who's looking for some functionality. I don't necessarily want to mess with any of the code because that's not my expertise. Rob and Alec are more likely to go in and do that sort of thing, and it's people like me are grateful for people like them because they're fixing the programs when we're finding usability issues with them.
Yeah, we're really open source consumers, aren't we?
Yeah.
Rather than developers.
Right.
And it almost makes you feel guilty sometimes, doesn't it? I want to use open source for the same reason that I want to have a compost pile in my backyard. I mean, it's just the right thing to do, and there just seems to be such a convergence of ideas around society and sustainability and what's important and the whole notion of just a consumerist orientation creating all kinds of problems in society that that we need to address.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a socio-political reason to use open source software, but I really do think that more and more we've got to get away from using things that essentially do bad things on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that that's true. That's not a statement. I don't want to say that about everybody who's creating software is evil and bad, and they shouldn't make a profit because we've got an economy that depends on people making a profit and doing well. But I get really weary of companies rolling out new versions every 3 months that you've just got to have and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And charging for a new version when there are very few updates in it. Things like that.
Yeah. My dad is he's kind of torn on this because he loves Mozilla. Really
yeah.
loves that. But his career was as a software analyst. He used to test software for things that ran, like, satellites.
Yeah.
And so beta testing drives him crazy because it's people doing it free for what he used to get paid to do. But at the same time, he loves things like Mozilla. So it's a bit of a conundrum there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I just was messaging a little bit with Dean, and my apologies to anyone listening who hears the little quack as we're sending messages back and forth to each other. He's decided not to join in because I'd have to start the conference call all over again, and I asked him if he had any comments or suggestions. He said, not really, rock on. So thanks, Dean. You're in our hearts and minds and with us in spirit, and hopefully we'll get Alec and Dean in on a conversation very soon. And I was really paying more attention to what Dean was writing than the conversation. So
okay, well we were talking we were just basically talking about socio-political reasons for using open source, whether it's do it for the right reasons because just commercialism generally isn't an evil thing, but it's created some bad situations in the world. And I was trying to make the comment the analogy that I like the idea of using open source about the same reasons that I like the idea of keeping a compost pile in my backyard. Because I just think it's the right thing to do for the planet, but I don't know. I haven't really thought that through. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who make a living at building great software that I love. You know, I dearly love. I'm one of those people who I really like the iLife series.
Oh yes,
I love the way it's
Absolutely.
Integrated, and I'm willing to pay for that, and I'm happy to pay for it. And I want people out there to be well rewarded for what I think is wonderful work. But I just think it gets carried away. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The same reason that universities got into distance learning, I think for all the wrong reasons in some cases. How can you say that? All the wrong reasons in some cases. But you know what I mean. In some cases, I think universities thought that this would be a great cash cow. You can put together static courses that students pay a lot of money for, and they'll come in droves, and all you have to do is develop it once and just put it out there.
Right.
And we know that model. We knew that model wouldn't work when they were talking about it before, even when we were counseling universities that was a silly thing. Idea, and it wasn't going to pay off that way, nor was it a good way to teach, they still went ahead with it, and many are mightily disappointed now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's kind of the same thing in that sense. We take things that we hope have value, and then we try and oversell them.
Well, I think, you know, there's a gap or sort of a time lag in terms of certain segments of software. I was asking earlier about if it's the fate of applications to become open source, because I think that in some cases some of the innovation in terms of ideas or some of the markets that are being opened up for software are being done by commercial ventures. I was going to say commercial companies, but that is kind of redundant. But it's being done by companies for profit, and they put up these ideas, and then after a while it gets copied by the open source world and emulated by the open source community, and you know, the companies can move on to other things. I also think that... Sorry, go ahead, Rick.
Well, can I ask a question about that? Commercial entities. I mean, what drives them? Of course, is profit. I mean, here's an idea for some software. Can we make money at it? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just the way. That's the right question for them to ask, given who they are. But if the open source community is going to be different, can they just get by copying the ideas that are out there commercially and trying to do them for free? I mean, what I'm wondering is, can you give me an example, or can you think of any examples of open source software that are really cool little ideas that have no commercial viability, you know? And if there weren't an open source community to do them, they wouldn't get done.
Not off the top. Well, the first couple of things I thought of were things like Apache, things like WordPress, and a lot of blogging software. I think that some of the things have arisen out of the open source world, almost because they're using them as tools for their projects. I mean, Apache, I don't think that... Well, I know there are commercial vendors of somebody just signed off, so again, I might have noise on the recording. I don't know if anybody would come out with and develop a web server commercially these days, because Apache is just there, and it's so available, and there are so many people who know how to use it. Basically, they've saturated the market, and they define the market in much the same way that some commercial vendors define the market for their segment. I also think, going back to earlier asking about areas where the commercial software might be superior, I think you're right. Things like iLife and things that integrate really well together. I don't see that open source has done, at least not yet, a really good job of putting together a polished package in terms of something like the iLife series. And I think that Apple maintains its advantage by the fact that it does present that nice usability factor. And for the most part, people who are developing open source software have been writing for an audience somewhat like themselves, in terms of they have the code and people can tweak and adjust it. And the two of you have been saying exactly what they need to start understanding, is that not everybody wants to tweak and adjust and fine-tune their software. They want it to just work out of the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rob, pardon my ignorance for a second. Can you answer a question? Does Linux run on a Mac?
Definitely. There are versions of Linux that will run on a Mac. On the PowerPC I think even on the older Motorola 68000 series, there was Yellow Dog Linux, which worked on the Mac, and on the Intel chips, I think any of the current Linux distributions will work on that. Let me just check. I've got the Edubuntu page open, and I'm going to take a look at the downloads, but I think that any of the current ones will do that, and you can download them and install them onto a Mac. And in fact, if you're running something on one of the Intel Macs like Parallels, then you can install... Edubuntu has a PowerPC version, so there you go. And it says there's a PC Intel x86 version as well, so I don't know which would work on the Intel Mac. I was going somewhere with this. Remind me.
I was just asking if you could run Linux on the Mac.
Oh, yeah. If you have Parallels, then it has been advertised as something you can use to run Windows, and I think Boot Camp as well will do this. You can also install a Linux distribution with those, and that way you can have a machine where you can have a Linux window running within your Mac environment.
Okay. And what's the Oh, yeah, what's the purpose of doing that in a Mac environment, other than being able to run Windows?
Well, if you're developing software that's cross-platform, or you are developing websites, it's really nice to be able to take a look at, you know, a website using all the Mac browsers, using all the Windows browsers, and using the Linux browsers as well. Although, you know, sadly, they're sort of a small segment of the market, so they're not really a big consideration during website development. But if you want to take a look at the web pages and see how they render on different browsers on different platforms, that might be one reason why you're doing it. Another reason is that you know, people might be Mac users, except there's, you know, one or two applications that they have to use for work or for some other reason. And by doing that, they can have their Mac and run Windows on it, just so they can run those one or two applications.
Okay.
Well, Rob, what do you think?
About?
We're 42 minutes in.
Yeah, I think that's
We're 43 minutes in.
Coming up to 43, yeah. And it's used up 38.4 megabytes so far. I've been using proprietary software to record this. And, you know, what it comes down to is I'm very pragmatic about using open source software. There are certain things that I need to do. If I can find an open source tool that lets me do those things, I'll use it. But yeah, if not, then, you know, I can shell out and use the proprietary tools. But, you know, once I bought the proprietary tool, as long as the open source tool does an equal or maybe even a better job, next time there's a version upgrade, I might just move over to the open source tool instead of keeping up with the proprietary one.
Do you think we're going to see a lot of movement?
In what areas?
Well, people switching.
Browsers, that's one where a lot of people could switch, is the browser.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to have happened already, really.
Yeah, Firefox has really caught on. I don't know where the next one would be. OpenOffice is really good, but I think that Microsoft Office is so dominant in the workplace, and it's so tied in with their server architecture, with things like Microsoft Exchange and all those other server components, that they pretty much locked Microsoft Office into the work environment. So that's going to be, you know, dominant for a long time. Although for people's personal use at home, I still can't understand why people would pay for a copy of Microsoft Office instead of using OpenOffice.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's come along really well. Version 2 has so many lovely features in it, and I think sometime soon they're supposed to be having a citation manager built into OpenOffice.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have to give it another try. I did one of the early versions of it, and really I grew tired of messing with it after a while.
Okay.
I'd like to give it another try.
Oh, there you go. Any final thoughts about where open source software is going to grow, or where it's going to take us in education, Rick?
Well, I'm thinking that universities are going to be breakthrough areas. I mean, an awful lot of the development work seems to come out of universities,
mm-hmm.
And networks that at least pass through universities with a lot of other people in the open community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if there are going to be big inroads, it's going to have to, I think we're going to see some intrusion institutionally. Institutions finally kind of throwing up their hands and saying, okay, we're going to switch over to Moodle, for instance.
Yeah.
And I think the reasons will be economic, just like Heather said right from the beginning. I don't think that universities are necessarily the bastions of places that want to do something pro-social all the time. I think their motivation would be, say, that they don't want to pay Blackboard or WebCT licensing fees.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll see that for a large institutional licensing fee, you can hire 3 or 4 people
exactly.
to provide support. So.
Exactly. Yeah, and have a, you know, dedicated core group of programmers that can, you know, they can maintain all that code and tweak it full time.
Yeah.
And then pass their improvements back to the rest of the community. It's really a win-win situation.
Heather, but there's a lot of inertia in the system. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, people have bought into WebCT, for instance. I mean, that's just one example, but Microsoft, all the Microsoft products and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of buy-in, and it's hard to create change after there's that much inertia in the system.
Well, I think that the patent issue is going to create some fear about switching as well, because people are going to be hesitant to switch to, say, Moodle or Drupal for their courses, because they may have to switch back depending on how this patent is interpreted.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the impact of that is still, you know, going to play out. I don't think we've seen anywhere close to the end. I don't think we've seen all of the beginning of how that's going to play out. And certainly we're going to have to come back and discuss that another time.
Yes.
Great.
Heather, what do you think for impact in educational institutions of open source software, even the open source ideas?
I think we're going to start seeing, as you mentioned, that your school is using Moodle. I think we're going to start seeing more and more of it at the K-12 level as we start getting it more introduced through things like the SACE conference and so forth. Because I think it's definitely started at the post-secondary level, since, as Rick said, that there's more development going on at that level, and there's more people like us who are, this is part of what we do and part of what we study, whereas K-12 teachers are so they're so buried in the work they have to do that they need it pointed out to them. They need a little guidance on finding the tools that are helpful to them. So I think that's where it's going in education. You talked about browsers and, say, OpenOffice as well. I think another area that we've sort of touched on is going to be in web development, and that's things like WordPress and Drupal and
even things like EnView for doing static web pages. Yeah.
Yeah, people are just using these things to create web pages instead of Dreamweaver or what was it, Front Page or any of those, because they're free.
Yeah, and I think also for a lot of them, it's a different view of what the web is all about. It looks at the web as a communication tool instead of just some place where you put static pages.
Right, and especially if you have somebody else install, say, WordPress for you, using it is very easy.
Yeah.
Once it's been set up, you can add things and change things, and it's incredibly easy, and it's much easier than using, say, Dreamweaver to do the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in my school, I have to say one of the reasons why we've been able to push with a lot of this stuff, and I think we were kind of alluding to this earlier, and Rick, you were saying, you know, about being able to pay people on staff for the same as the licensing cost. My principal has decided that, you know, part of my job for half the day every day is to do computer support and, you know, help teachers with application use, and also it's given me a chance to develop some of these resources as well. So it's not just having those things available and out there. I think because teachers are incredibly busy at the K-12 level, that there need to be people, and schools and school divisions need to institutionalize a geek, and, you know, have somebody in place that is going to try and look at what's possible and do the tweaking and be able to manage the software. So that's, you know, maybe another area that needs to grow as well, is at least in the K-12, is institutional support for the people who are going to be doing that.
Yeah.
Does that wrap us up pretty well?
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. Says it all.
All right. Heather, thanks for joining us. Actually, I think it was
my
your
pleasure.
Idea to have the conversation anyway, and I kind of hijacked it and turned it into a podcast because I want to get something out there. But it's been great having you on the show. I think we get to officially in what's the word I'm looking for? We get to officially let you join and bring you into the posse, and we'll send you your badge and your hat and your spurs. Hopefully we'll have you back again before
I'd
long.
Love to.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Rick?
Yep.
Always a pleasure.
Same here, Rob.
All right, and I'm looking forward to the keynote.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I've got to go write it.
The EdTech Posse Podcast is released under a Creative Commons share-alike non-commercial attribution license. The EdTech Posse website is at edtechposse.ca, and you can email us at edtechposse@gmail.com. Feedback is always appreciated, so send us a note or even a short audio clip as an attachment.